My name is David. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, David.
I'm really glad to be here. I somehow recovered from this hopeless place that I got myself to. I'm from Anchorage, Alaska. My home group is the Monday Night Men's Meeting, and my sponsor is Runar from Iceland. And this whole trip, I got my sobriety date's May 23rd, 2002, and I guess I can start with I started drinking when I was about 14, and it was at first it was some beer, and I felt good, and I didn't get in any trouble, and then I drank some gin, and I remember something happened. I remember I felt this beautiful way about life, and then I wanted to stay that way forever, and then I overshot it, and I got in a fight with my dad, and there was blood everywhere, and the police were there, and they decided that they were going to put me in the car, and I didn't want that, and then they put me in anyways, and I woke up the next morning in a youth facility in the cell, and I wondered, how can I drink without winding up in jail? Because it was beautiful. I mean, I loved to drink. I loved that way that it made me feel last night was like an answer that I'd wanted my whole life and never got. It talks about in the book and that I felt at ease, and I tried to find that again through alcohol. And it worked for a little while, and then I would get in trouble again. And within a real short time, I was in the center for a year because of drinking. And I got out, and I'd been sober for almost a year. And I thought that every alcoholic does that after a little bit of time of sober, that you can learn again how to drink. And I had passed that. I had passed that that line, and really quickly I was drinking more than I ever had, and I was becoming a practicing alcoholic. I did that for about 5 years, and when I was 20, I had become everything that I had never wanted to be. I became a person that I utterly loathe. I became just so low of a person that that I'd swear I was going to change my life that day, and I would pick up a beer and I would drink it, and I would be dumbfounded why I was doing it, because I didn't understand. And I always used to say I would quit drinking when I wanted to, and then I desperately wanted to, and I couldn't. I couldn't do it. I had no control. I had no power over it. And I wanted to quit drinking, and I didn't know how. And so I thought that maybe trying to kill myself would solve that, because drinking wasn't working. And I had this huge pistol at my house, and I thought, maybe this is the way to get out. And and I didn't have any ammo though. And then the next morning, I'm playing with this gun, and I'm pulling the trigger, and the next morning, this kid comes into my house, and he says, I got ammo for the gun, and I shrink so small, because I was afraid already of everything in the world, and my world had come to my basement, and I was uncomfortable to go anywhere already, and then I couldn't even live there anymore, and that was a good place for me to be at, for an alcoholic, because I was at that jumping off place. And I knew I needed something more than what I had. And I shortly after that conceded to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic, that I had something was with my body, different than other people, that when I put alcohol in my body, it did it differently, and I would develop these cravings, and I couldn't stop drinking more. And I already knew about the my mind thing. I mean, it was obvious to me. So when I came to AA, and that was the first step, it was really easy to accept that. I knew I was an alcoholic. I went to one meeting, and a bunch of kids from a treatment center were there, and all I could do was cry the whole time, as they bullshitted their way through the whole meeting and talked about, you know, all kinds of things that I knew that I wasn't there for. And after, you know, I was they were done bullshitting and I was done crying, a guy came over to me and he said, you know, just don't drink tonight and come back. You know, there's a meeting tomorrow you can go to. You know, and I got a schedule. And at the next meeting I went to, I got a temporary sponsor. And I went out and I did the first three steps with him within 10 days of being sober. And then I went to a men's meeting. It was a men's stag beginners meeting, and it was a dark room in an Alano club, and there was this guy there with a black leather jacket and black clothes, and it's the middle of summer, and it's a dark room, and there's this dark foreigner there, and there are people that are sharing, and you know he's laughing at him and pissing people off, And then he turns his attention to me at the end of the meeting, and he's asking me, "Why are you here, kid?" He's like, "Well, you know," and I'm like, "Cause I drink and things get messed up." And then he's like, "Well, why don't you try some controlled drinking?" And you know, I tell him a little bit more about my drink. I'm like, "You know, I'm the kind of guy that buys a keg and we go out to the valley, and I end up with my all beat up, my truck's messed up, all my friends left me, and no more beer." And I spent the money to put the whole thing on. And he's like, "Yeah, you're hopeless." And I was like, you know, I wasn't the support that I was looking for here. But I was beat down so bad, and I didn't want what I had anymore. I wanted something else. And so I followed him around, and he asked me to go out fishing with him. So I showed up out in Bristol Bay, you know, worried about my warrants and flying on the planes and all that. Those things that come up, you know, to try to stop you from getting well. And I went out there, and you know, there's Runar smiling when I showed up. And it had been so long in my life since someone had been happy to see me somewhere. And you know, I got to work on that boat, and we talked. He's like, "You can't complain. No bitching, no whining," and that's what I did, you know. And we talked about spirituality. We talked about God. We talked about, you know, all kinds of things that, you know, got me fired up about life. We talked about men's meetings. We talked about a lot about men's meetings, and he got me stoked about this idea of a men's meeting. And I'm gonna be a pussy up here and cry. He has anything? So I got excited about this whole idea, about a spiritual experience and living a spiritual way of life. Because I knew from being a little kid I always wanted this. I always wanted to have a deep-rooted kind of spiritual life. But I never knew how to get it. And I was always so, like, just unable to live with life. But I wanted to be connected. I wanted to be whole. And I didn't know I didn't know how to do that, though. And then, you know, I got this book, and it gave me simple directions on how to do that for a person that, like me, that has a spiritual malady. I'm not right. I'm not comfortable with myself, and I have a physical allergy to alcohol. That when I put it in, it makes me feel awesome, and then I want more, and I can't. And then my mind, when I'm not drinking, I can't stop wanting a drink. And with all these things combined, it's a lethal combination for me. I mean, I can't beat it by myself. And so I get this opportunity to, you know, I mean, sure, I'm powerless over alcohol. I mean, the police prove that time and time again. I mean, the guys kicking my ass proved that time and time again. I mean, just, you know, I proved it kicking my ass time and time again. I'd run into walls. I mean, I was my own worst enemy. And then, you know, I get this solution. So I do I'd already done the first three steps. You know, I said, whatever kind of higher power is out there, you know, sure, I'll accept that. And out there on the boat, you know, I got times to kind of develop my own understanding of it. I mean, I didn't even understand it anymore. I just got, I guess, more to believe in it and more to make that decision that this is the decision that I make to change my life from here on out. You know, I'm not just going to not drink today. I mean, I had to tell myself that, you know, the first few days. But once I had 2 weeks, which is longer than I'd ever been sober by myself, but, you know, just sober in my life without people putting me in a room, you know, without alcohol. I mean, I was sober out in the world. And, you know, there's the captain's drinking booze, and, you know, there's alcohol in the boat with me. And I'm not freaking out wanting to go drink it. Because from before, you know, I mean, the night I quit drinking, I tried to give my dad a fifth of booze to say, hey, dad, hide this from me. I stole booze from that man my whole freaking life. And I'm trying to tell him to hide it from me. And, you know, I'm like, this isn't, how is this going to, you know, I was like, he couldn't do a good enough job when he wanted to keep it for himself. I was like, he's not good, you know. He leaves it out on the table, and I'm just like, you know, I'm there by myself. I'm powerless over it. I wanted to drink 3 beers, and I was, you know, finishing off this fifth, and I didn't know why, and I didn't know how, and it overwhelmed me. So, you know, I said by myself, you know, I can't figure this out. And then and I get into the steps, and then, you know, so I've done the first three, and I get a different sponsor for whatever reason. And he makes me wait a while to do the steps. You know, maybe I'm 6 months sober and I finally get around to do the 4-step, which is way too long if you ask me. I was crazy for too long. It's just, you know, I'd recommend doing that as fast as possible and not having to wait around with it. Because I remember the uncomfortability of having to write all that stuff out and then knowing what it is and not, you know, being able to just sitting on it. I mean, it's... The only thing that's ever gotten me closer to God is to empty out all that stuff that I got. I mean, Runar said on the boat time and time again, you know, you can get well regardless of anyone, provided you clean house and trust God. And that's what I needed to do next. And so I looked at all, you know, all the things that all the people had done to me and all my resentments, and I seen, you know, where I had been at fault in my part. And we worked those out. You know, I did it out of the book, and, you know, I got to tell somebody, and I didn't really know if I trusted him or not, but I was like, you know, I don't really know who this punk dude is, but I'm gonna do this, and if it comes back, you know, it probably isn't gonna be worse than what I've already been through, because I already had to live through that stuff once, and people knowing about it isn't that bad, because, you know, I mean they knew about it in the beginning, so I did the fifth step, and then I wasn't sure that I did it right the first time, so I did it again with another guy. And I started getting a little more relief, and then I did the six and the seven, and, you know, I spent more time on my seven, trying just to make sure that I didn't want to skimp on this, because it talks about, you know, we're building this archway that we're gonna walk through, a free person, free from this you know, life that I wanted to end. And, you know, I didn't want to have a wimpy little arch. I wanted to have something that was solid and that, you know, I could get through and it was going to be good. I didn't want that some kind of half program, because I seen it around. I mean, I seen a lot of sick people in AA still, and they weren't getting well. And, you know, I seen this guy, you know, and I'm getting, you know, 30, 60, 90 days, and I see this guy and he's keep on calling himself a newcomer. And, you know, I'm like, fuck that. I mean, it was not for me to come back in a time and time again. I mean, I knew that when I came in here, I made a decision for my life. I mean, it wasn't just, I'll go check out what AA is doing today. I mean, it was just so bad. And when I needed a power, I needed a miracle, I wasn't going to, like, just be going back and forth with that. So I did the seventh step, you know, and I'm like, you know, these things that I do that make people mad, that hurt people, the people that I love particularly, you know, I just ask for them to be taken away. And, you know, I think most of them had, you know, sometimes my fear crops up, but, you know, I asked, you know, I spent the time, and I did that. I said, please, you know, remove these things. And then came making this other list of all the people that I'd harmed. And I, you know, I took it from the inventory I made, and I made it bigger, and it added a lot of financial amends. I had a box of rubber checks, and I used every single one of them. And they, and you know, they keep track of them. They got your name on them. And I, I almost made halfway through those in 2 years, and it was about $4,000 or so far, and I got about $4,000 more to go. And you know, I made some headway, and you know, it's all I can really hope for to do. I mean, I drank for 4 or 5 years, so I hope that, you know, in 4 or 5 years I'll have that repaid. And you know, I got to, and by this time I'm about almost a year sober, maybe a little over a year, depending on, you know, which one of the amends I'm making. And my father, in this time, he's an active alcoholic. We used to drink together every day, and you know, I had a lot of resentments against that man from the beginning to the end. And I had accepted, you know, that he was probably going to die drunk, and then he got to treatment and he got sober. Or recovery is, and you know, I invited him to my men's meeting, and we clapped him off at the end. So you know, I wasn't sure what, you know, what, how that was going to go. But you know, he's working the 12 steps, and I had this you know, 9th step to do to him, because I did a lot of bad things to that man. I did a lot of things that sons shouldn't do, no matter what their fathers do, and so I had to go and clean up my side of the street, because like I said, I made a decision to get a new life. I didn't want to change my old one and upgrade it a little bit. I just wanted to scrap it and start over. And I talked to him, I asked him, you know, I told all the things that I thought that I did wrong. I asked him what I needed to do to make it right. And he was able, he had done his 9th step too, so we got to kind of exchange 9 steps at the same time. And, you know, my life kept on getting better. You know, I was able to apologize to my mom and repair the relationship that I had with her. I was actually able to even live with her for a little bit. And she didn't trust me before. And I was slowly able to regain her trust and kind of be a good person. Just, you know, making living amends. Just not calling up in the middle of the night drunk, screaming at my parents for being bad parents. And, you know, not making any more wreckage. I got to kind of clean up, you know, all these things I felt bad about that made me less the person that I didn't want to be. And the relief that I felt from doing those was lifting the weight off my shoulders that I just didn't even understand. And my life was getting better in all kinds of ways. I got a job at a school that I probably, you know, I almost went into if I didn't get institutionalized. And I have this 7 pages of criminal record that, you know, I'm walking in with to go apply for this job, and I just know they're going to turn me down. And yet they're calling up on the phone. They're like, "We just need a letter with your record to let you get hired. We'll start you on payroll." And you know, I'm all full of fear, and they're just calling me up. They're just, "Come on, just a letter. Just explain a few words. Just write it down." And after like 2 weeks, you know, I'm just dragging my heels because I'm just full of fear. And I write this letter, and they're like, "Okay, start Monday." And I was just like, you know, and there I am working with little kids, you know, like kindergarten through 12th grade. And the 12th grade ones are, you know, they're just like me. And, you know, I can relate to a lot of them. I know a lot of them are alcoholics, and I kind of talk about that. I mean, just talk about whatever they wanted to talk about. And I'm working with these kids, and I just get to go in and play basketball with them a lot of times. And, you know, and I'm like, when does work start, you know, out there on the basketball court running around. And, you know, life had gotten... It was getting manageable. I mean, I was doing these things, and it was changing. And I didn't have fears as much anymore. I was starting to see these promises. The 11th step, prayer and meditation. I try every morning to turn my will and my life over and ask for guidance. Being here has been awesome. I'm kind of like 8 hours difference from Alaska, so I get up earlier. I don't know what the deal is. We got 24 hours of daylight there too, but it's just, I don't know, it seems more powerful here or something. And so I've been able to get up early in the mornings and just kind of pray and meditate and find my conscious contact, which is pretty easy when you're around so many people that are in recovery. I don't understand why my sponsor told me to come here at the beginning. I didn't understand why he said you had to come back in 2 months if you stay longer. Then, you know, he set me up totally. I mean, to see how strong, you know, what I got to do to carry this message and see how it's being done over here. It's just phenomenal to see so many young people in recovery. Where I'm from, it's not the same. There's there's little pockets of enthusiasm in my home group, but I came here and you know, I was greeted and I've been welcomed, and it's been something else. You know, God has entered my life, and like the book talks about, he says that you know, he's going to be my principal and I'm going to be his agent, so I'm representing this higher power, the spirit of the universe, and as my duty or responsibility or actually privilege, you know, I get to show, you know, like the third step says, you know, take away my difficulties, let victory over them, bear witness to those, thou help of thy love, thy power, and the way of life. And that's a lot. I mean, take away my difficulties. I had a lot of them. I mean, I could complain for hours about them and, you know, just to go on and on and on about all of them. And some of them were little and some were big and some were outside issues and some were alcoholism. But, you know, majority of them, all of them, when I'm in God's light, are taken away. And I get to be that. I get to be that experience that God can do so much for someone. And, you know, I don't like to talk a whole lot about all my drinking and drugging I did, but I mean, you know, people see me now and they meet me now, and they, you know, I start to tell them about, you know, that the times that I was doing, you know, Oxycontins and I was shooting up, and I decided since I'd already shot up that I should maybe try heroin because I didn't, you know, I needed to compare the two. And, you know, there's a logic in that, you know, so regular people don't understand. And the guy that I was, you know, the guy that I was picking this girl up from, you know, he's like, why are you doing this? And I was like, it doesn't make sense to you. It makes great sense to me. And, you know, it's just all these things that, you know, I do in life that that were killing me, you know, but I didn't really see it because they made sense because I was so, I had this dis-ease. I was disconnected from any kind of balancing point. You know, some days I'd be happy and off the walls, and then other days I'd be depressed, and I couldn't find any kind of medium, and I'd always try to make it work with alcohol, but then, you know, I'd punch holes in the walls and, you know, steal money from my dad and, you know, get in a fight with my girlfriend, and, you know, all I wanted was to kind of have, you know, some kind of regular life, and no clue as to how to do it. And by coming to, you know, I mean, I wasn't sure that AA was going to be able to solve all these problems. You know, I was like, I knew drinking, I mean, in, you know, these 5 years, I'm like, okay, so where's drinking? You know, I mean, I need to solve this, I need to solve that. But this drinking thing, I kind of want to hold on to that because that's like my only, it's the only thing that really helps me deal with all this, this reality. I mean, if it wasn't like it was, I mean, maybe I could not drink. I didn't understand that. You know, that this whole disease and how it pretty much entraps me into, if I don't find a spiritual experience, a spiritual awakening, a spiritual way of life, that I'm going to die miserable, alone, in jail, you know, just a life that, I mean, it's a cruel sentence to have no answer to. And so I trudge this road and, you know, I go looking for new guys. I go to treatment centers. I go to McLaughlin, where I was institutionalized at, and I see staff members that are used to, you know, lock the door and you know, say goodnight, and now they see me come back there, and I get to try to carry the message at the youth center there, and I got approved as a you know, a certified volunteer, you know, and you know, when I called them up at 6 months, and they're like, you know, they're like, hell no. And I called them up, you know, I was like, I'm just going to call you back again. I was like, and then I called them back at 9 months and like, ah, no. Like, you know, and I just got longer and longer to sobriety. And eventually they're like, okay, in 6 months, we'll give you a 6 month waiting period and then you'll come back. I'll be like, all right, I'll be back from Europe then. And you know, I had a little bit of resentment and ego. How could they turn me down? And, you know, I'm carrying this message. And yet, you know, I got to go in there and I got to talk to a few of those kids. And really, you know, it made me feel probably a lot better to walk out of that center without a guard, without a probation officer walking me out, because, you know, I was in there for a year. And so that feeling, that was just, you know, God just was shining on me the whole time I was walking out of there. I mean, it was just phenomenal. because I, you know, I mean, that was lame being in jail there, and you know, it kind of reminds me of that guy that was in prison, and then he ended up being the warden of it. I mean, I was able to turn the table and be on the other side of it. I have lived, you know, the misery of it, and because that's I left that out. My first meeting was when I was institutionalized. The guy came in, and he said that when he was 16, he drank like this. He said that he went to the meetings, the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. He got sober, and I remember when this drug counselor, who I knew she was, you know, full of treatment, so I didn't really believe her, but I remember when she told me to go to AA, it just brought me back to this guy who told me that he got sober when he was 16. And, you know, I kind of remember that, you know, all throughout my sobriety. And then, you know, one night I finally meet this guy on the year he has his 17 years. And, you know, I got to give him his coin for that, and because he carried the message to me. He planted that seed, you know, when I was 14. I didn't even, you know, I knew I was an alcoholic, but I mean, I just didn't have enough knowledge or something, I guess. I wasn't satisfied with the misery or something. And so, you know, I got a little more, and yet, you know, he carried the message, and he'd gone in there, and for me to be able to maybe do that, do what he did, to at least to when I was at that broken point, and I was at that, I was at that little kind of that low where you can break through all the defenses that we make for ourselves and all the confusion that we make for other people when they're trying to help us. I'd go to counselors and psychotherapists and psychologists, and you know, I'd love talking with them, and they'd want to fill me full of drugs, or I'd hate talking to them, and I'd just cry the whole session and feel like worse at the end of it, and just embarrassed that I even went in to do it, because, you know, I mean, my life was so bad. And they'd be like, well, you want to try to get a job? And I was like, you know, they had no idea how deep these things were. I mean, a job wasn't going to fix what I, you know, the pistol that I wanted to put in my mouth. I mean, it wasn't a financial insecurity that my life was. I mean, it was such a spiritual bottom that I needed a miracle, like my sponsor says. He goes around now and he asks people, do you feel like you need a miracle? And when they say yes, you know, it's kind of cool. And now I've been around for 2 years now in my home group, and I get to see guys who used to come in, and they used to just to talk. It's just to talk, and I wouldn't hear a word they said because they weren't saying anything. They're just talking, and then suddenly it changes what they're saying, and they're talking about, you know, what's really awesome when you get in here is when you get in here and you see a guy that was hurting, and you see him do something, and then you see him wake up, and you see him get a spiritual experience. And when he's saying that, you know, he's talking about some other dude he's seen, but I'm seeing it in him. And that must mean that, you know, somebody might have seen it in me, because, you know, that's how it says in the book, that's how we notice it, you know. We notice other people's lives are taken off. And we're going to notice other people are going to notice in us before we do. And it was, it's just these gifts that keep on being given through the fellowship. I mean, I thought that, because I mean, drinking did a beautiful thing for me, you know, chemically in my mind. It was, I got relief. I mean, I could take a drink and all the tension in my back, that would just go away. That, you know, hours of yoga barely touches. And so I needed, you know, like a sufficient substitute. And I needed a place to where, you know, my life, you know, I wouldn't be, it's, you know, it says in the book, you know, a stupid boy and glum. And, you know, coming here to Iceland, I know you guys are, you know, got a lot going on here. It's not about, you know, being righteous. You know, I see some people back at home in AA that are trying to be righteous on me. And, you know, I just can't really have any of that. I mean, I don't come here to be, you know, it says again in the original manuscript, you know, no axes to grind, no people to please, no lectures to be endured. And that's the methods we find most effective. And so, you know, I come in here, and I love having a fun time in AA. I like going out. I love bringing new guys with me and just going and doing different things after the meetings. I always try to show up to the meetings early. You know, bring new guys if I can, if they are looking for a ride. You know, going to the treatment centers and picking them up. Just anything I can do to make you know, my experience in Alcoholics Anonymous more fun and add to the experience that someone else is going to have. because it's just, it's awesome to see, you know, a kid to get out of treatment. And, you know, when I had no place to go and no one to turn to, no one to talk to, you know, at least he has a chance. He might not stay sober, but at least, you know, I made it the effort, and I enjoy, you know, me doing so. I think it's Bill's writing on Tradition 5, it's self-preservation, duty, and love that fuel my life now. And, you know, at times I slip out of that, and, you know, I start getting back into self and my ego and all that. But then, you know, I get pulled right back into it, and, you know, I go to my meeting and I see, you know, my friend have a spiritual experience. And, you know, it's just awesome when I stick around long enough to see, you know, a guy that's just, you know, he's not around for 6 months, and then something happens at 8, and then he's still there at 10, you know, and then he's getting his year chip. And it's like, you know, how did that happen? I mean, you know, did I really stay around this whole time and participate in this whole thing? Because I never finished anything before. And I never could, you know, finish school, finish nothing. I mean, finish the booze and everything. But I mean, I never, you know, maintained the commitments I had. And, you know, I was, you know, they made me secretary of the men's meeting there in Anchorage. And, you know, they say you're supposed to be there for 6 months, and somehow I hung on for 8. And I got to kind of be a centerpiece of something and talk to people about it and be involved in it and, you know, be a part of something, not the head, not the tail, just, you know, in the middle of it. And when you hear good things about that meeting, you know, you'd invite to and say, hey, I've heard good things about that meeting, you know, and it's like, you know, that's, you know, when I go in there, I know that's where I belong. I mean, that's my home group. It's a spiritual place. I mean, it's a sacred place for me to go to, a haven. I mean, I get all twisted out of shape at any day of the week. And, you know, I go in there and, you know, I sit down and there's someone I know, and they're talking about this program, about getting a spiritual experience that changes them from being a messed up person that can't stop putting chemicals in their body to someone that's focused on passing on a message of hope. Because for a long time, you know, I didn't have any hope, and there was nobody I could go to that could give it to me, that could transmit it. And somehow these alcoholics were able to uniquely touch me in a way that other people can't. I mean, I have other mentors, but the intimacy that alcoholics have of knowing this, willing to go so far down just for a little bit of pleasure and relief from a substance. I mean, it's some people understand that and some people don't. But the ones that do, the ones that understand what I'm talking about, when they're talking about, you drink Listerine, and I'm like, no, but I've inhaled a hairspray. And then he's like, I talked to you for 3 minutes and I know you're an alcoholic. And, you know, when I can fly halfway across the world and, you know, meet person after person after person and, you know, have this jive of these steps of this program, of this fellowship, and not, you know, I mean, I even picked up on which chapter it was, you know, with, we read the same thing in my home group, you know, more about alcoholism, you know, I heard the cognac, and I was like, yeah, they're naming off different things that I tried to do. So I'm going to drink $35 cognac when I'm on the streets. That'll keep me sober. I'll be better. I'll be the homeless, you know, sophisticated drunk. It was all these different things I tried to do, and none of them, you know, they all seemed to mess up somehow, despite my best intentions of trying to have a good life. And now, you know, life is beyond good. I mean, this program, you know, and you know, coming here, and I get a stand, a guy's room. I don't know where he went, but he has all these speaker tapes on the computer, and the, you know, and I'm just listening to one after another, and I listen to them when I'm sleeping, and I'm just, you know, AA by osmosis. And you know, I wake up and he's talking about, you know, spiritual experience, and it's just so cool that to come to a place that's just so rich with this message. I've you know, I know that I have a purpose in life now. And for, you know, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I knew I belonged here. I knew I had the symptoms. But I didn't, you know, it talks about the fellowship and it says it'll come. But for me, you know, I wanted it now and I wanted it that day. But it was, you know, it got built slowly, you know. The home group I have, it was six guys at first. And then, you know, it was 55 this winter. So, I mean, it's happening. It's there. And, you know, all I got to do is show up and see where I can add to and put my hand out to the new guy that's just as hopeless as I was and just as broken and just as scared. And he doesn't know if he wants to quit drinking. He doesn't know if he's an alcoholic. He just, you know, he was just like me. You know, for 6 months, I'd say, I don't know. No matter what you asked me, no matter what it was, I mean, all I could utter was, I don't know. I was taking, you know, handfuls of antipsychotics and blacking out for 20 hours a day and sleeping for the other, you know, just trying to not even be in reality. And I see guys come in, you know, with that scaredness in them. And, you know, I know what it's been like. I mean, and when I start talking about it to them, you know, they can, you know, they're like, man, this, you know, this dude, he's been there. That, you know, and only us alcoholics seem to understand that loneliness of when we really get down there and really, when we really get lonely. And, you know, there's no one else because we're so distant from God. I mean, that's what really, you know, makes us so alone, is just being so far from God and we try to depend on people. I mean, and then, you know, somehow you get God. And, you know, then I'm not alone anymore, no matter where I go. And I don't have to be always talking about myself. I don't have to be always, you know, doing anything. You know, I can just be. And for me, you know, finding peace in any moment, or even a few moments put together, is what I always wanted in life. And it's by coming and working this program of Alcoholics Anonymous that I got that. And I thought that it was going to be different things, you know, my mind here, my big voice, it always tells me that it's gonna be this over here, and it's gonna be that brand over there. You'll find it in that church over there. And, you know, then my sponsor will tell me, why don't you stop and meditate for 15 minutes and then see where you're at? Because the only time that you're gonna find God is now. There's never gonna be a better time for you to get connected to God than right now. And that's something that, you know, all these other people were having a hard time telling me of. And I call him up, and sometimes he doesn't say it so nicely as I want him to, because, you know, he says, meditate for 15 minutes and don't call me back. and you know, I just like, okay, I called him too many times today, because I like to speed dial on my phone, and yeah, I'll pick it up and I'll start in the middle of a thought to someone in AA, and they're like, you know, you have some time sober. You shouldn't be, you know, you should think about what you say before you just start yapping away to somebody you don't know where they're at. And, you know, I still got a few little things I gotta work on. But this is like icing on the cake. You know, it's like, do I want just to have, I mean, I already got the life that's second to none, but how much better do I want to make it? How much more do I want to put in? How many more people do I want to try to help with this? And, you know, by coming here, I can't even explain to how much just seeing people here and being invited to things like this and seeing, you know, so many people just coming to a speaker's meeting like this. You know, I'm going to have something to talk about when I go home to all these people in my home group. And I'm going to have a really strong message of hope to share that, you know, people here have embraced AA and embraced the message that the text talks about, that not everybody does. That, you know, I go places and I hear people that don't have God. And, you know, I feel sorry for them. I feel, you know, because I'm pretty sure they're afraid. Because I know that without God in my life, I'm paralyzed with fear. I couldn't have probably gotten on a plane and left, you know, my whole life in Alaska that I've never left before. I could have never done that. Even if I was drinking, I mean, I couldn't even leave my basement. I had a hard time going to get, you know, alcohol from the store, much less socks from, you know, I mean, just, I couldn't even buy clothes. I was just, how could I go out and spend time in public? And I was just so uncomfortable with any of it. And now I frolic around the country and the world and go to different AA meetings. And I start trying to complain to my sponsor, and he's like, "You write papers and people pay you to go to school." He's like, "Your life's good, stop bitching." And I have to sit back, and when he puts it like that, and I'm like, "Yeah, you know, I do got it pretty good, you know, when I'm not in myself." And then I talk to the new guy who's with us and who's who's trying to figure this deal out, and I try to lead him to God, you know, as he can understand him. And you know, I try all the different, you know, the different understandings that I've learned about to try to convey that. And you know, I just hope that he picks up on his own, you know. And I try to just keep to carry this message. And you know, if they go out, they go out. I mean, one kid, he's my age, and he keeps on coming in and out. And you know, I wish I could, I wish he would stay. But I know that I can't protect him from alcohol. I know I can't protect him from this disease. I can try to be a part of the fellowship and introduce him to this message and be an example of this. And that's not such a bad deal. I love seeing people get sober, and I love seeing the spiritual experience. But I also like seeing, you know, guys come in new and you know, they're hopeless and they're all messed up, and you know, I just get to try to talk to them, because it's a lot of fun being able to just see somebody that doesn't even know what they want, you know, kind of start to figure it out, and then they're able to take that and give it away to someone else. And I mean I couldn't figure, you know, this thing out if I wrote it myself. I mean, it's a good deal. I want to give this thing away, because if I was selfish enough to keep this to myself, I know I'm self-centered, but the gifts that I got here, you know, I didn't really deserve, you know, the life. I always thought I wanted to have a good life and to please people, but you know, I didn't ever really, you know, put in the work to do it. And now, just by showing up to meetings, by doing these 12 steps, time and time again, you know, I'm in a, you know, a different country. I never had a passport before, and I never got to live life on the, kind of like the wings of God, I guess, because I'm not doing this myself. I'm just being a part of it. And I ain't thank you enough for letting me come here and talk for a while about the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and the program. I think you guys have vastly more than a sufficient substitute here. I'm glad to see this fellowship in this club. I've heard a lot about it. Thanks.